We're CJMQ, and today we're interviewing Mr. Ed Griffin, who is a Canadian and based in British Columbia, I believe.
That's right, and I'm happy to be on the interview with you.
You've written several books. Dystopia, a book you wrote with Mike Olton. You've also written Veto, Prisoners of the Willawa, and Beyond the Vows. So definitely a seasoned writer. And right now we're going to be talking about your latest composition, Whose Railroad Is It? That's a short story. And it's also the lead story in a book of short stories.
Yes, it's the book is called Through the Window of a Train, and it's available in any bookstore. It's put out by Borealis Press. I think they're located in Ottawa. Borealis is B-O-R-E-A-L-I-S, I believe. My story is the first story. There's a lot of memories in the book, and of railway employees and people who rode on trains in the old days. Maureen, I think that if we don't, there's a saying, I can't quote it exactly, but if we don't remember the past, we're destined to repeat it. And you can see in this era that people really loved trains and cared about them a lot, and that somehow they produced a group spirit, or they produced a feeling of unity among people. I'm aware in our time that the car seems to have replaced the train in many ways, and the car is kind of an isolated thing. I was talking to my son about things that drive us apart, and I was saying that cell phones seem to isolate us, and he said, nothing isolates us more than the car. And I think this is true. We feel like we're individuals and everybody else on the road is competing with us, and that guy just pulled ahead of me, darn him, and so forth and so on. And we have a very individualistic attitude. And it's clear from this book, Through the Window of a Train, that in another era, people really had a sense of unity and worked together to accomplish things. Kind of a great thing, and I feel I'm talking a little too much here.
No problem.
But I think that the future holds the train and it's going to be much more. We can't continue with this car culture because of the pollution. And because of overcrowding, I live in a large suburb of Vancouver, Surrey, and I've been here for 20 years. And in those 20 years, I've watched gridlock develop in my little suburb. This can't continue. You know, every housing unit has two cars. We just can't go on. We're not going to be able to do it. And we have to develop better rail transit. So the past is the future, and I think we get a good feel for the past through this book.
Definitely, and I love the title.
The book is really nicely produced. It's very slick paper and a very, very nice binding. It's paperback. I think it's priced around $20. My story is kind of different from other things in the book. My story is called Whose Railroad Is It? And it's a fictional account of something I happened to see in the Revelstoke Rail Museum. Most Canadians are familiar with the picture of the last spike being driven by Donald Smith, I think it's east of Eagle Pass. I can never pronounce the Scottish name, Craiglachie, I think it's called.
Okay.
But the picture I saw in the museum was another ceremony of the last spike, and these were a group of ordinary employees who were in Donald, B.C., about 100 miles east of the last spike ceremony. And I imagined that they were promised that they were going to be, a train was going to come for them to take them to the ceremony. So they all got up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and of course a train did not come for them because they were just ordinary workers. So it produced the picture of these ordinary people having their own little ceremony. Made me think about the Canadian Railway. Whose railroad is it? Was it Donald Smith's? Was it Van Horn's railway? No, it was the railway of those ordinary workers, of the Chinese people, who many of whom lost their lives in the Fraser Canyon in very dangerous work with dynamite and working on the edges of cliffs. The railway belongs to the people who built it, and that's the Canadian taxpayer. That's the men who drove the steel across the prairies and across the mountains. So I wrote a story about these men in a camp and how they were expecting a train to take them to the ceremony, but the train never came, so they had their own ceremony. And that's kind of the point of my story. But I really believe that this ribbon of steel that crossed our country made our country in many ways, and the railway belongs to the people of Canada, and I think it was a unifying force, and it was in the past, and I think the railroad will be again in the future.
Okay, certainly is. Certainly an eye-opener when I read the short story, Whose Railroad Is It?
Thank you. And I think another thing, just to show you the future, we have such an interesting thing here in B.C. There was a railway that ran, I don't know, 150 kilometers from a small town near the mountains, Chilliwack, all the way into Vancouver. And this railway still exists. I think they haul coal on it right now. And there's a group of people that are trying to resurrect it as a people transportation line. And the province keeps on building sky trains and other forms of transportation, ignoring the existing line that ran all the way from Chilliwack into the city. There's even a song about this railway that it was like a streetcar, and you could ride on it for a dime and go all the way from Chilliwack into the city, which probably, as I said, is about 150 kilometers and would take you maybe 2-3 hours. And it goes through now what is all developed. The Fraser Valley has a lot of communities, Surrey, Langley, Abbotsford, Chilliwack, many communities, and this line could be developed, and there's a group of people that are trying to do it. So I think the rail, which was a very strong part of our past, is also part of our future.
Oh, I certainly hope so. I know that many communities are trying to get the train back.
Right. And I think, I've had the experience of traveling across the country on train, and you start to talk to people again. It becomes a social thing, and there's somebody sitting opposite you, and you start to talk, or you have lunch on the train, and somebody is assigned to sit with you, and mm-hmm. you really meet some interesting people. I remember my wife and I met people who were raising goats.
Okay.
So it's totally different from my experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
Much like
I think
you.
The train does lead to more unity among people.
Certainly, the people who worked on the railway itself, a lot of different cultures and a lot of different backgrounds coming together. Very definitely.
And that is shown in the book, too, that the different communities, different kinds of people came together on the railway. The book tells of immigrants who are coming. There's poetry in the book. A good friend of mine from British Columbia, Emmanuel Erickson, writes some great adventure stories about runaway trains and avalanches and so forth. people write about a woman who worked on the railway in an age when all railway workers were men. So it's a highly varied book and has a lot of different things in it. Pictures are in it too, pictures of old-time trains and so forth. It's not just, I mean, it is a memoir of railway employees and people who rode on trains, but it also, I think, is a guide to the future or an encouragement for the future. If I could mention, Maureen, too, that the story of the writing of the book is kind of a fascinating story for me. A woman named Barbara Lang, I think she's in Winnipeg, she put together or asked a number of people, myself included, to submit a story about the train. And she put them all together in book form, and then she started the difficult task of sending them to various publishers. She sent them here and there, and this covered maybe a 3-year period where she was trying to get it published. And she had no luck. And she was about to give up. In fact, she wrote to all of us who had contributed and said, well, we give it our best. It looks kind of bad. And, of course, right then and there, Borealis Press, I think his name is Frank Tierney, wrote to her and said, yes, we're going to publish it. So it's kind of a message of never give up.
It certainly is. That's an interesting story. 3 years.
Yeah, and she did a wonderful job of continuing to do it. I think all writers have to be inspired by that kind of thing, that you have to keep trying. You can't give up.
No, and I like the idea of different short stories by different people. You don't just get one point of view.
Exactly, yeah. And like my friend Manuel kind of fictionalizes the accounts, which makes them very interesting. And I was actually pretty impressed with the quality of the writing in the book. You know, sometimes in a memoir, the writing can be a little sloppy and not careful, but this book puts together some very sculptured and very worked-over writing that's very fresh and very good.
Good. About how many short stories did you say were in the book?
Well, I think there's maybe 3-4 short stories.
Okay.
Most of the accounts are memoirs, a few poetry in there. The book has, I'm just looking at it right now, has about 260 pages. And again, it's great to see a book written about the train. And this is from the view of ordinary people. With all due respect to Pierre Burden, he writes great books, but he writes about the famous people, Van Horn and Donald Smith, and running over to England to get money and so forth. So
mm-hmm.
on. Here's the stories of people who live next to you and I.
Okay. Most books about history do tend to be biased, I think.
Right.
Okay, that's wonderful. Were you surprised when your story became the lead one?
Yes, I was. It's kind of nice. What I was kind of sad about it is I had asked the Railway Museum in Revelstoke for permission to use the picture
mm-hmm.
that had inspired my story, and they just never answered me. I sent them a letter and tried to call them and so forth, but they never answered. I guess museums might be kind of reluctant to let their pictures go. But it's a great little picture. It shows these ordinary people, and there's two mounted police. Well, they weren't mounted, but they're obviously Mounties
mm-hmm.
In the picture, and they're kind of standing off to the side watching these suspicious ceremonies. What I imagined was that that one particular van knew they weren't going to be transported over to the ceremony, so he found a rail that needed fixing, and he got everybody to come out take a pound or two at putting in the last spike, and and that's when the picture was taken. So
that's very interesting. Certainly says a lot about the Canadian people in general.
Yeah, and I think it shows that the railway does belong to ordinary people, to the workers, to the families of the workers, and to people. It's great to see train books coming out. I think the train is the future. Look at other countries, Japan, Europe, who have developed these high speed trains. And if there ever was a country that is perfect for the need for a high speed train, it's Canada. We have, you know, the second biggest country in the world in terms of area,
mm-hmm.
and you know, look at how far you and I are. We can communicate by telephone, but for me to get to Montreal by train would take me, what, 3-4 days, something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the train is the future, and the right-of-ways that exist now are very important to hang on to them. Unfortunately, sometimes we see the right-of-ways sold or neglected to the point, we had a great railway going through our mountains here, the Kettle Valley Railway in B.C., and it's gone now, and a lot of it is freeway. It could have been, if not a train, it could have been a great a bike path, a recreation path for people. I came from, in America, from the state of Wisconsin, which used its old railway beds as bike trails for people, and then very successfully, too. People came to Wisconsin from Chicago and Minneapolis to ride the bike trails going through the rolling hills of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Nothing
and,
better
yeah.
could mm-hmm. have. B.C. had these has these beautiful mountains in which bike trails could have been developed. There are a few bike trails on the old Kettle Valley Railway, but and the Kettle Valley, I don't mean to keep talking about
no
railways,
problem.
But the Kettle Valley Railway was an amazing one. There's a book called McCullough's Wonder, and McCullough was the architect, what would you call him, the engineer who planned the railway, and he did an amazing job going from the city of Hope here in the Fraser Valley over two ranges of mountains, developing a railway that was in the direction of east to west as opposed to north and south. So it's gone now and replaced by freeways. But
that was interesting.
Yeah, maybe it'll come back someday.
Yeah, well, definitely around here, a lot of our train tracks have been turned into bike paths and walking paths, but they are
great.
Talking about getting a train back in the area here, so that would be good, too.
Yeah, that's great. So,
yeah
it's very hopeful to see the hope of the future that I think has to be the train. We just cannot continue with the car.
No, definitely.
The age of the car, I think, is over.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely, yeah, I think you've always had an interest in trains.
Right, right, yeah. So,
okay.
So I think the book is an attempt to show the past, and again, if we don't understand the past, we really can't deal with the future.
No, and definitely I get the impression that in the history books there's not enough credit given to the actual workers who did the work
exactly,
rather than to the politicians.
Exactly. And this book, if it does nothing else, shows how ordinary people related to the railway.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Okay, well, that's great. Anything else you'd like to say on your short story or the book in general, Ed?
Well, I think it's a very nicely done book. I was quite surprised by the quality of it. You know, sometimes you can get a book and it's kind of poor paper,
mm-hmm.
and the binding breaks the minute you open it. But this book is on very slick paper and very nicely put together. I'm pretty impressed with the quality of it. I'm very happy for all the people who've had their work in it, and I think a special Congratulations must be given to Barbara Lang, who put the book together in the first place and then persevered through long efforts to get it published.
That's wonderful. Yeah, she did a great job working on it for three years.
Oh, I see on the back here it says 1995, so that's the list price of the book.
Okay.
And available in any bookstore. It's the bookstore, if it doesn't have it, can get it quite easily by writing a note to the publisher, Borealis Press.
Okay, and the name of the book again?
Is Through the Window of a Train.
Okay, I love that title, right? Through the Window of a Train. Certainly giving us a different perspective.
And a picture on the front is an old-time train in B.C. B.C. has a mountain in the background, too.
Mm-hmm. Are all the writers from B.C. or from different areas of Canada?
Oh, no, it's all across the country. In fact, I think Mr. Erickson and I are the only two from British Columbia, I think.
Okay,
Most of the writers are Eastern Canada.
Okay, definitely. We can see a correlation there between all the cultures and people that worked on the railway itself and all the people that gave their stories in the book.
Right. Not just Eastern Canada, but mm-hmm. Barbara is from Winnipeg and
in
the middle. So
that's great. Good.
From everyone. I'm a writer, and this whole business of trains was very interesting to me. And I just got read all the books about it, and I'm very interested in it in terms of its history and in terms of the future of it too. So I'd like to see our country look more like a European country with high-speed trains and a lot of money put into via our national passenger rail, and I'd like to see much more interest in trains.
Well, hopefully that's the direction that the country will go in the future.
Right.
Good. Anything else you'd like to add before we go?
No, I think that's great, and I hope the book does well, and I hope people take a look at it.
Good, and we'll just mention your website, too. It's www.edgriffin, that's edgriffin.net. Are you working on any other projects in the future?
Yes, I am, Maureen.
Oh, good.
Thank you for asking. I have finished a book called Once a Priest. I spent 5.5 years as a Roman Catholic priest in my youth from 1962 to 1968. And during that time, I marched in Selma with Dr. King. I was a very idealistic young Catholic priest. When I marched in Selma, I came back to my parish, which was a suburban parish, and we always think now of Dr. King as a great hero, but in those days, he is a hated man. And when I came back to my parish, it was an all-white suburban parish, I was sort of driven out of the parish. A group of people had gone to the pastor and said, pardon my language, but if you don't get that nigger lover priest out of here, we're not going to give you a dime anymore in the collection basket. So the pastor went to the bishop, and I was moved into the central city of Cleveland. And it was a very traumatic thing for a young man. But it was actually, in terms of my whole life, a great thing. Anyway, this there is a theme to my life, and it is that the priest, you can take the man out of the priesthood, but you can't take the priesthood out of the man. And it seems to be, as I look back on my life, I'm 74 now, as I look back on my life, it reveals a theme that the priesthood continues. I kept repeating it. Like right now, I work with inmates in a federal prison.
Mm-hmm.
And teach them how to write. I'm a volunteer, and I've been doing that kind of thing all my life. So my memoir, my autobiography, if you will, is called Once a Priest, with the idea that the priesthood continues. The book is finished, it's been edited, and we're seeking a publisher right now for that book.
I'm certainly looking forward to reading that book.
And one more.
One more.
People ask me, they say to me, well, you're against prison. Well, what's your answer? So I'm trying to write my answer. I'm trying to write a novel in which I show what I think a prison should look like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very challenging project, and I'm trying to, you know, not be a novel full of speech-making. It's a novel full of real characters living real lives, and I'm trying to show what would happen if you developed a humane prison. What would a humane prison look like? So that's my project that I'm working on right now. I have no title for it yet,
mm-hmm.
but I'm almost finished a first draft, and then another draft, and then editing, and so forth, so on. So
definitely tying in with your other book, Prisoners of the Willawa.
Yes, right, and I certainly want to write a sequel to that one. That was my first novel, and you always think that your first novel is terrible, you know, that the writing is weak and so forth, but people seem to like that one.
They love it. Yeah, they really do.
I don't know why in some ways, because my writing is I think weakest there, but the story is very strong.
Yeah, the story, the ideas are strong, and that's what people grasp.
Exactly.
Good. Well, we thank you very much and wish you all the luck on this short story and this book and your future projects.
Thank you very much, Maureen. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye now.